Lately, I've been thinking a lot about loneliness. It's everywhere in the news right now. In 2023, The Times reported that young British adults in their 20s were the loneliest age group in Europe. And last year, Gov.UK found that 9% of adults aged 25 to 34 reported feeling lonely often or always, and that's higher than the national average. It's not what you'd expect, and it's even been called a loneliness epidemic. Then I didn't ask me anything on my personal Instagram, and someone popped up in my DMs asking, how do you make new friends in your 30s? And I realised this is something we need to talk about. Making friends was never something we were taught. So how are we meant to navigate this? And with this topic, I knew Daisy was the perfect person to unpack this. She's the founder of The Selfhood, a creative studio and community built around connections. And she's spent years exploring what it really means to form meaningful relationships beyond just followers, likes, or fleeting interactions. Daisy has a way of cutting through the noise and getting to the heart of why so many of us feel disconnected, even when we're surrounded by people. We talk about modern loneliness, why making friends as an adult feels so different, and what actually helps when you're craving real connection. Daisy is warm, wise, and genuinely empathetic. And this chat will make you rethink how we show up for each other. Let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. It feels weird having you here IRL because I feel like I met you before, but
it's
I haven't.
It's weird, isn't it? I feel like when you walked in, I was like, I know you, but I don't know you. It's strange.
From Instagram, to all my friends from Instagram.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for being here, Daisy. This is a topic that I really wanted to cover around kind of community and friendship and connection, because I've had a few people recently sort of drop into my DMs and ask about, like, you know, I'm kind of lonely. There's stuff going on. Like, where can I meet new people? And the Selfhood talks a lot about that, right? I mean, the name says a lot. Can you take me, where did the name The Selfhood come from?
Of course. So The Selfhood was actually a uni project, and the word Selfhood actually translates to the quality that constitutes one's individuality in the state of having a unique identity. So originally, when I started the business, and the uni project was all around really amplifying what makes brands and people and stories unique and telling that story. And then as I delved deeper into the purpose behind Selfhood and what I really believe in, what we actually do now is work with the self, so the individual and the person, the brand, the creative, the creator, the person who, you know, is part of the community, and then the hood, which is like the neighborhood and the community. So it's really a fusion of the two. It's really celebrating the things that make you different, but then also building a community around that. And I think community is a really interesting word. I've been on such a mission the last few years to really call out community washing from brands and people who use it as a way to kind of make their audience sound more appealing. But yeah, I think community is a really interesting topic right now. And as you say, I think a lot of people, well, it's been declared that there's a loneliness epidemic happening, especially in the UK. So I think it's a really interesting conversation that seems to have really surfaced over the last few years, which is really great. I think it's so good that people want to talk about what really is community. How do I build one?
Definitely. So you started working more with brands and the kind of founders. But then I guess how I've discovered you is that you have all these little community groups yourself, or not little community groups at all. You have big community groups yourself and you hold events. What made you want to add to your services or your experience and do more in real life community building?
Backstory. I was really scared of public speaking. I hated it. It was such a huge barrier between me and my confidence in marketing the business and getting stuff out there and getting myself out there. And then I started to, over time, it's been a really long journey, but I kind of overcame that fear and was invited to speak at events and on panels for brands. And I really started to notice the power of in-person connection, especially post-COVID. And I started a campaign years and years ago called Check Yourself Before Your Notifications, which is all about really checking in with how you feel before you doom scroll and before you consume content. And I think what we're in danger of right now, and it's already happening, is mistaking synthetic interactions online for real connection. So we feel like we're really connected because 100 people have liked Instagram posts, or we've got new followers, or people are in the DMs. It's actually just not real connection. I think I never ever want to shit on social media. I think it is amazing for building connections, but I always say socials are the vehicle to that. So through overcoming my fear of public speaking and being at these brand events, I realised how much people really needed it. Mm. And my own personal journey, which I think we're going to talk about a bit, I really struggled with loneliness in my early 20s. So it's one of those things, I think, when you really... I was going to these events and people were saying, I really want to make new friends and I really want to connect to new people, but I don't know how. I find it really hard. I think, as like weird and cliche as it sounds, that really like pulled something in me, because I really connect to that and I know how that feels. And it's just happened organically, and it's honestly the best thing I've ever done. I don't make any money from my community. I don't monetize it, but it's by far the most rewarding part of what I do at Selford.
I love that. Mm. Yeah, loneliness really is one of those, it's such a fear-inducing emotion, isn't it? Mm. Like, of all the negative emotions, loneliness, it just has such a, like, captivating kind of control of people. And, I mean, I'm always taken by, you know, the Age UK advert.
Oh, I know, it breaks my heart.
And it'll be like, John's got no one to have Christmas with. And I'm like, fucking John, come around my house.
Know.
I'm like, I take all my money and time.
I know.
Because it is such an intense, and it can feel like a place that you just can't get out of, loneliness.
Yeah. And I think there's actually a real stigma around it, especially in younger people, because I think you're so right. When we think of loneliness, we automatically think of people like the older generation who are at home and maybe have lost partners and are out of touch with their family. But it affects so many people. And I know when I was experiencing it, I felt quite a lot of shame around it. And I felt like there was something wrong with me, or why don't I have loads of mates? And again, I think social media really perpetuates that, because if it's a Saturday and you've got no plans and then you open up your apps and everyone's out and they're busy, it really magnifies that feeling.
Mm.
So I think it's not only super common in lots of different people, but loneliness can be such different things. It can be feeling out of touch with your community. You can have loads of friends and feel lonely when you're outgrowing friendships, because you may not align with those people and connect anymore and feel quite alienated in your friendship group. So I think it's something that's quite hard to admit as well, because mm-hmm. quite often we're made to feel like we're the problem because we feel lonely. But I actually think Western society is an enabler for loneliness. And when you go to places like the Mediterranean and everyone's back doors are open and people are in each other's gardens day and night, like, we don't do that in the... Obviously, it's freezing cold in the UK, so we can't. But I think our culture is really, like, self-focused, and we don't actually allow much space for community.
We have this interesting thing in the UK, don't we, of like not being nosy. It's like, don't be the nosy neighbour.
Mm.
And I think that's so deeply ingrained that our like politeness of, you know, you see the neighbour who maybe like her eyes are a bit puffy, she looks like she's been crying. And in the UK, the polite thing is to just be like, not say anything, you know, leave her to it. That's her. I wouldn't want to intrude. Versus in other countries where people might be like, what's going on? Open the door. I'm coming in. Let's have a tea. Being a bit more like forceful with their kindness.
It's so true. I was actually walking down the canal near Victoria Park with my partner at the weekend. And we used to live near there. And he said, it was in lockdown, he said, I'll never forget in lockdown, I sat on the edge of the canal and this guy walked past me and said, are you all right, mate? I said, yeah, I'm all right. Thank you for asking. He said, are you sure? He was like, yeah, I'm actually fine, but thank you for asking. He said, I will never, ever forget that.
Mm.
And that's such a rare story. And I just think, like, that shouldn't be rare. We should be looking out for people and checking in on people. But again, like you say, it's that not wanting to interfere or appear nosy, or like, also fear of rejection, I think,
definitely,
is a big thing, like putting yourself out there and, asking, like, do you want to go for coffee? Like, do you want to be friends? Like, there's such a stigma around that. And I think, like, the numbers speak for themselves. Like, the dating scene in the UK is on its arse because there's this real, like, self-optimization-led culture, and people are so dismissive of others because they can be replaced on apps, and people are so obsessed with, like, hustle culture and grind that they'll cancel on their friends to go to Pilates and get an early night. And it's like, where's the line between self-improvement and seeing your mates and also just, like, checking in on strangers? I think our society is quite... warped in that way.
it's almost like there needs to be a shift of seeing friendship. And I personally think that, maybe it's just my experience, I think there's quite a split between genders on this. Like, I think that generally women have a bit more of a view of, you know, friendship is an important part of my self-care. Whereas I often, you know, I meet lots of men who are incredibly successful, who will do the cold plunge, will do the sauna, they're at like High Rocks, whatever, they're doing all of that. But actually sitting down with one of their mates and being like, you know, what's going on is really difficult for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm mindful about getting into territory that I'm not an expert in, but there needs to be safe spaces for men to talk as well. If we want to talk about loneliness, it needs to be inclusive. And I think there's a much wider conversation around, like, how do we actually tackle this real divide? I do lots of research on this for my newsletter and for projects. And I read some really quite scary research recently about the younger generation, and they were saying that men and women have never been so divided in their views and in their values. And I think, again, a lot of that comes from social media narratives and fear, and yeah, just there's lots of things that contribute to that. Like I said, I'm not an expert, but I think if we talk about community and loneliness, it needs to be inclusive as well.
I'd love to really, so I want to use the right language. And when I was preparing for this chat, I realised I use friends and community kind of interchangeably. Is that right or not so much?
I think that's such a great question. I think when I think of community, it's groups of people who connect over shared values and like-mindedness. And you don't necessarily have to be friends with everyone in your community, but it's that sense of belonging. But then I think with friendships, you don't necessarily have to have shared interests. You bond through experiences, and you bond through time and various different events in your life. Whereas community, I think you can definitely make friends through community, but I think communities span from sports groups, meetups, various different interests, but you don't necessarily have to be friends with everyone in that community. I also think communities are things that you can sometimes dip in and out of as well.
I think
there can definitely be crossover there, but on the whole, I think they're different.
That's interesting, because it really taps in actually to this research I read the other day. It was from the University of Kansas, and they were looking at how many hours it takes to make a friend. And they said that from going to being from a stranger to being a kind of acquaintance, you have to spend 50 hours with someone.
Yeah.
Then to go from being an acquaintance to a friend, I think it was 80 hours.
Yeah.
And then from a friend, like a very good friend, I believe it was 120 hours.
Yeah.
I'm going to fact check myself because I wrote it down.
I've seen that before. And I think I remember seeing that and thinking that's why we become such good friends with people at work really quickly when we were in the office. But obviously we don't have that anymore. We don't have that consistency in adult life. It's so easy to make friends at school and at uni because you're with people all the time. But because of hybrid working and lots of people are freelance now, I think the ability to make friends in later life is trickier because we don't see people that consistently.
Definitely. I actually just checked it was 200 hours to make like a close friend. So that can feel overwhelming.
A long time,
right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of time. So what's your kind of experience of, you know, loneliness or developing community and friendship? How's that kind of developed in your own life personally?
I moved to London when I was 24, so around 8 years ago, and I didn't know anybody here at the time. I just wanted to build my career, and I knew that most of the opportunities that I wanted were in London. And I remember I got here and I found it so hard to make friends. I lived in Bermondsey, and I laugh about it now because it's actually like really sad, but I used to, every night I would walk over Tower Bridge and then over London Bridge and do laps sometimes because I didn't have anyone to hang out with. So like, I was like, I might as well just go for a walk.
Yeah.
And I'd call my mum, and I remember about 6 months in, I was like, I just can't do this. I feel so isolated. It's so lonely. And she said, please don't. You've worked so hard to get here. And I did some really random things. I think that was the breaking point where I just thought, I need to just do something about this. And I remember going to watch a monk speak about the meaning of life in West London on a Sunday afternoon on my own.
Okay, that's cool.
Met the loveliest people ever. I went to pottery classes. I went to music events. I just did loads of stuff on my own. And it was through just really putting myself out there, which, by the way, just like didn't come naturally to me. I had to really, really push myself to do that. And I think that's what really started my journey into community. And that's why I feel really passionately about it now, because I know how it feels to be isolated and alone and feel like you don't have people around you. And I had friends, but they were still at home and I was in London. And I think London can be quite a full-on city as well. If you've just moved here and you don't know people here, it's quite, because it's so fast paced. It's not like you're in the coffee shop and you chat to people like you would in like where I grew up. It's a bit more like neighborhoody. So I think just doing stuff out of my comfort zone, and that's what I always advise to people who want to make new friends. It's so scary. And that's why whenever I host events, I always try and put icebreakers in and make it easy for people to chat to people, because I get it can be really overwhelming if you aren't, if it isn't natural for you. But I think the best thing I've learned and what I would recommend is that you just start going to events alone. Eventbrite, Meetup, like there's so many cool communities in London. Click is another app I learned about recently, CLIQ.
Oh, yeah.
So there is stuff out there, but going to an event on your own is, have you ever been to an event by yourself?
Oh my God, it's actually like gives me slight PTSD. When I remember when I first started going to networking events, and I must have been 24-ish, so you know, I'd been in the workplace for a while, but I started going to networking events, and I'd go and be like, come back after and be like, I hated that. And I didn't meet anyone and it was pointless.
Yeah.
And then after a few of them, I realized like, yeah, it's because you go and you get your little tea or your glass of wine. And I stand in the corner because I was so afraid of like saying anything to anyone. It really is. I mean, I found it to be a muscle. Like it's the more you 100%. Use it, you know.
100%. And I think there's this, I don't think networking is like this anymore. I think there's so many events that, I think actually, no, some events are very transactional, but I think there's a lot of events that don't feel like traditional networking now that I think it's changed a lot over the last few years. But I was the same. I was like, what do you say to new people? Like, what questions could I ask? So I think also having questions prepared beforehand is really helpful.
Yeah.
And just an idea of like, what are the kind of things you want to find out about people? Something I like to ask, and I ask this even at my co-working days now, is where have you come in from today? Mm-hmm. Just a nice, really easy question to ask somebody that opens up where they live, what their commute's like, how they found out about the event, how often they're in the area. It's like quite a nice organic entry to conversation, but not that anyone has to use that. But I think having those questions beforehand is what really helped me as well.
Yeah. Also knowing that like a lot of people going to those events will feel exactly the same.
Oh, 100%.
We're all walking 100%. In there like, oh, don't know anyone, scanning the room.
It is like, I don't know. There must be a science to it, but there is something really nerve-wracking about that. Some people find it so easy, which is great, like so good for them. But I still find it, if I go to an event on my own, I still get really nervous. Do you get nervous still?
I'm getting there. I'm getting better. I will do that like classic awkward thing of just joining the group and being like, ha 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 ha. Anyway, nice to meet you. It's like something out of a movie. It's just very cringe. I will just walk over and like,
that's the way to do myself. It. That's the way to do it.
But I went through this real, you know, as a bit of a personal share. I think anyone who follows my personal Instagram would presume that I've never been lonely a day in my life. And I think it's so far from the truth because my husband's a DJ, so we, you know, we're around a lot of people a lot. We travel a lot, but he travels every single weekend.
Wow.
And that was such a shift for me. Like, I remember the first few years I would like go to the gym and I'd spend like half my day in the gym.
Yeah.
Because I was like, well, I don't want to just sit in my flat staying. And I'd see people, I was living in Brixton, and I'd see people like going out to the park and I'd be like, oh, I'd love to go to the park. So I'd go and take my book and sit on my own for a few hours. And it all felt so tragic. But over time, I think I kind of, with that idea of a muscle, I started doing this, what we called like micro connections. I don't know if you've heard that.
That's really nice.
So I would force myself to like, if I was going into the Sainsbury's, just ask the person like, are you having a good day? Or just try and find anything at a bus stop with an old person, be like, oh, I actually really love your hat. That's super cool.
Yeah.
And try and like flex that muscle. And I think it comes back to what you were saying earlier about like rejection. So you are sometimes going to get rejected.
Yeah. I love that so much. It's something I speak about in my TEDx when I was trying to overcome my fear of exactly that, overcoming loneliness, public speaking. I set myself, I called it microdosing confidence.
Oh, that's so nice.
And it was exactly that. It's so interesting that like intuitively we've both been on that journey, but instead of saying like, oh, hey, can I have an oat milk latte, please? It would be like, what time do you finish today? How's your shift been? Compliment a stranger on the tube. And it's terrifying at first, but then afterwards, it's so lovely. My friend, it reminds me of something my friend said a few days ago. She was saying that there was this guy at the gym. She's got a boyfriend. She wasn't hitting on him, by the way. But she said he was much, much younger. She said it reminded her of her younger cousin. She said, I've really noticed he's really been putting the work in at the gym and working really hard. And he's got like really like buff and beefy. She went over to him and said, I just want to say, I really recognise the work you're putting in at the gym. You look great. And apparently he picked his phone up straight away and was like smiling for like Aww. 5 minutes straight. So I think like the micro connections is so nice, but also complimenting other people makes you feel really good as well, because it's that energy exchange. As long as it's sincere and it's meant and it's you know, it feels real and genuine. But I think men don't get complimented enough.
So true.
But everybody, I think, how nice is it? I've had compliments before and it's literally made my whole day.
Yeah.
It's just so nice when you get a really sincere compliment.
I completely agree. It's so nice. I remember, I can't remember what someone was talking about it. Like if it pops into your head, something nice, like just say it.
Yeah.
Like it could be anything. My big thing though, so I always accidentally try and do it when people, I don't realize they've got AirPods in, and I'll be like, I love this girl's outfit. I want to just be like, I love your outfit. She's like, sorry, what?
And I'm like, I've done that before.
And by the time she takes her AirPods out, I'm like bright red and I'm like, I like your outfit, like almost crying with awkwardness.
I've done that so many times where like you shout it across the road and everyone hears but the person. You're like, okay, like,
don't worry about it.
Yeah, compliments are a really nice angle. That's a nice way to strike up conversation.
And also so many people, as you said, I think a lot of people are dying for small talk. There's been such a stigma previously around like, oh, I don't like small talk. I like deep conversations.
Mm.
Like I fucking love small talk and shit chat.
I love mundane. It. A bit of mundane. We all need it.
Yeah. Just
what you're watching on Netflix at the minute.
With like, someone just, you've not met, you know?
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Mm.
And I think the other thing is, you know, it's very easy. I think the pattern often is if you're a bit lonely, you might throw yourself into exercise. But people can see if they can try those little micro interactions or self-dosing confidence. Because the reason people go to a yoga class rather than, you can do it on YouTube, but it's free.
Mm.
But you go to a yoga class because you want to be in the room with other people.
Yeah, it's so true.
So don't always scurry in and put your mat down. Like probably if you're the first one to put yourself out there, everybody else in the room opens up.
Yeah. Totally. I think there's also something really powerful. And I know we're talking about small talk, and I agree. I think there's definitely more room for small talk. But there's also something really powerful in, and I'm so conscious that this word has been so overused because Brené Brown, who I absolutely love, by the way, has made this such a thing. But I do think there's a lot of power in vulnerability.
Mm.
So like, my yoga teacher, my train of thought was sometimes I go to her class and she's this like most radiant, lovely, warm energy. But sometimes she'll say, guys, I'm PMSing today and I'm not feeling my best self. And then we'll go around and like talk about how we're all feeling and the energy. And it just, you notice the shift in people feeling like, do you know what? I've had a really stressful day.
Mm.
Like, and I think by her sort of setting that scene, and it's done in a very, very well thought out way. It's not her just like dumping her stuff on us.
Yeah.
But you just notice how much people feel and soften into admitting where they're at as well. So I also think there's a real power in admitting that you're not okay all of the time. If someone says like, how are you feeling? Oh, do you know what? I'm actually not having the best week.
Mm.
And I think in the UK, we're so aware of our politeness that sometimes we don't want to sound like a burden, but it's actually all right to just say, do you know what? I've actually had a really shit week.
Yeah.
And like, let people help you. Let people, obviously, if you just met them, maybe not. But like, if you're, you know, a co-working day or you're seeing someone for the second or third time, I think it's okay to admit where you're at and be honest as well.
Definitely. And or maybe it's that you have to let yourself have a little bit of grace as well, that it's not like competitive or people aren't probably judging you. Like, you don't walk around judging everyone else. So I'm sure they're not doing it to you.
Totally. Totally. I think there can sometimes feel like we need to always appear like we've got our shit together. And it's like, you're just human navigating life.
When you came to London, like that feeling of realising like, oh, I'm really lonely. Did you like internalise that on yourself? Or were you really aware like, yeah, I'm in a new city. It's hard.
I thought there was something wrong with me. I remember lying in bed and being on Reddit forums because I was young. I was in my early 20s and we weren't really talking about mental health a lot then. And I remember as a result of my loneliness, I felt quite anxious as well. Like right. Because I think the more time you spend away from people, the harder it is to kind of re-find that groove and flex that muscle again, as you pointed out with your micro connections, which is such a lovely way to think of it. But because I was feeling quite disconnected, I started to feel very socially anxious and just anxious in general. And I remember Googling my symptoms and just reading about anxiety and watching YouTube videos about anxiety and just feeling so embarrassed at the time, which makes me really sad now because I have no problem admitting if I'm feeling a bit angsty or if I'm having a bit of a wobble. And I think most people, well, actually, no, that's not true. I'll take that back. I think a lot more people do feel comfortable with admitting where they're at. But yeah, I thought there was something wrong with me. I honestly was like, why do I feel like this? Surely this isn't normal for a 24-year-old. Sorry, there's a leaf in me here.
Tickled by a leaf. Totally. I think people really do internalise that and think that, oh, I must be awkward. That's something I hear. And actually someone dropped into my DMs and said, like, I've moved to the city, but I'm really awkward and I don't know like how to meet people.
Yeah, I'm like, the city's awkward, man.
Yeah, the city is awkward. That's literally it. And, you know, I read this really interesting thing about the three pillars of friendships, actually from Mel Robbins. And she said that so many people internalize that and they start thinking like, it's because I'm awkward and I'm not friendly and all these things. And she said to make friends, there's like three aspects. So one is proximity. So like, how physically close are you to the people around you? Like, do you bump into them often? Do they live in your area? You know, how can you like see them often? Then she talked about something of timings, which I feel so connected to at the moment, which is that you might, let's say you've got proximity, you work next to someone, they're at the desk next to you, but the timings might be different in that they might be, you know, in their early 40s, they might have three kids, you might be coming out of university and studying. And even though you get on really well, you're at timings of your life, which are just not going to align. And the other thing she talks about is energy, is like, you can have those two things in common. You know, you live near someone or you sat next to them, you're in a similar stage of your life, but the energy also has to fit.
Yep.
And when you think about those things, it's like a lot has to come together, which you just can't internalize on yourself. Like there's so many aspects.
There's so many variables and I same as you, I really connect with that. Why do you connect with the second one out of interest?
Do you know what it is? It's that, you know, I'm 32 now and this is where the weird years is born from, is, you know, all these weird decisions that you have to make in your late 20s, early 30s, probably. I imagine it's going to be for a long time in the future.
Yeah.
And that timings aspect is like, I've got friends who are starting to have kids. I have some friends who are choosing not to have kids.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I really feel, when I think about it, it's actually really like a physical reaction of, it makes my hands feel a bit sweaty of these women that I've surrounded myself with that I love so much that I'm like, what if all our little timings come apart? And I don't know if you've had that with friends that, you know, you float apart and...
Yeah, I have. And I think especially during the weird years, like it's where life starts to fragment more, doesn't it? People move out the city or they pivot careers or they move abroad or they have kids, they get married. They say, don't they, that you create new friends every 7 years is like friendship cycles.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So I think it's really natural to outgrow friendships. And I was speaking to someone recently about this and we were saying, isn't it funny that we will go to therapy, like couples therapy is so normal now.
Yeah.
And lots of people will go to couples therapy, but when a friendship starts to break down, we don't put the same work in to try and repair it and understand each other. I think friendships, there's still a bit of a, I don't know, it feels like there's a barrier if something's not working. Like it feels really hard to confront a friend. Like you've been weird with me recently, like, what's going on? I'd have no problem saying that's my boyfriend. But the idea of saying to one of my friends, and I have had those conversations, and I have had difficult conversations with friends before, but it just feels so much more amplified in your head.
Definitely. It feels personal. I think that's the thing. Is I actually had this really recently with a friend, and if you're listening, you know, that's just how I felt. But I had texted her quite a few times and she hadn't replied. And it got to the point where I was like, I'm actually kind of worried. So I'd messaged being like, hey, I haven't heard from you. I'm actually quite worried. Like, let me know you're okay. I still didn't hear from her. And then she finally got back to me and was like, you know, I've got this stuff going on, the stuff going on in my house. You know, there's lots of different moving parts in my world. And it was such like a humbling of like, this isn't about me. Like, I'd made it this personal thing. And I was saying to my other friends, like, have I pissed her off? I have no idea what I've done. Like, why is she not replying to me? And it was like this reshift of like, yeah, well, everybody else's world is not revolving around me. And actually, you know, she just had loads going on and it wasn't the right time. And sometimes maybe you have to take a little step and just say, you know, just allow them to do that. Because they need to go through whatever that is. And I'm always very hopeful that with friendships, I think they go through ebbs and flows.
I think, and it's so interesting, I think technology is great for friendship, but can also be really difficult. I have this ongoing battle with myself, and I give my, it's one of the things I feel most guilty about as a person, but because of my job, I'm chronically online, and I recently made the move to delete social media apps from my personal phone. I just have a content phone for social media, because it was like, it's almost like giving your brain the most intense workout every single day without a rest day being online, because it's just like you're consuming so much and having to process so much. And as a result of that, I would be online and a lot of my clients message on WhatsApp as well. And I'd get to the end of the day and I'd had loads of WhatsApps from friends and I just would not have the mental capacity to reply. And then, you know, when you leave a WhatsApp for a really long time and the thought of replying becomes a task, and then because you've delayed the task feels bigger. And in the end, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm so overwhelmed that I've left it so long. And I had like a really honest conversation with myself last year, because also had a thing with a friend and they were like, it really upsets me that you don't reply to me in reasonable times. And I had to say, like, I'm so sorry. It does not mean that I don't care about you, but I want to reply to you when I'm fully present and I've got the energy to respond. It's also a voice noter.
Right.
Really long voice notes. And you know, when you're like, I want to sit in a coffee shop and give this the full audio experience and reply when I'm fully in it and I'm fully present. But I do think, and that's so fine. Like, everybody has different demands and boundaries with technology, and I totally get that. But I do think tech has also put unrealistic demands on a lot of, not just friendships, but relationships, work, online communities. Like, people feel so connected and it almost feels like there's this invisible agreement and responsibility that you have to be there on demand. And it's about, I think it's really difficult navigating, like, where's the line? Like, how do you have that conversation and saying, I'm really sorry, I just can't get to you today?
Well, especially as someone who's got a bit like a presence like you do on social media, is that someone messages you and it's almost like, before, if you wanted to speak to someone who, you know, wasn't a great speaker or a great writer, you know, done all these things, you'd probably have to like send them an email to their manager. They would decide if they would qualify you, if you were someone that was worth speaking to.
Yeah, that's so
and
true.
And it is that, like, that line of access. But I want to come back to your phones thing, because so you have one phone for your work and one personal phone.
Yeah, so it was a decision I made earlier this year. I went away at the very beginning of the year before I went on holiday at the airport. I just deleted all the apps from my phone. So I had WhatsApp. All I had was WhatsApp. I deleted my I deleted everything.
Wow.
And I felt fucking amazing. I felt so good when I got back. And it was one of my favourite trips because I felt so present. And when I was taking pictures, I wasn't, this sounds like, I'm so embarrassed to admit this, but I'm sure people will resonate. Sometimes when I take pictures, I'm like, oh, I could put that in the Instagram carousel when I was on holiday. I wasn't thinking about any of that. I wasn't thinking about online. I was just really, I enjoyed every moment so much. And I felt so present. And when I got back, I set up a content phone. So I have Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn on my content phone. And then my personal phone, I don't have any social apps apart from WhatsApp and Outlook.
Wow.
And I use my content phone maybe 2 or 3 times a week, working week, at certain times of the day. It will only connect to Wi-Fi, so I can only use it if I'm at home or my co-working space. And it has made such a difference.
That is mind-blowing for me.
It's made such... I know it's not everyone can... it is a privilege to have a second phone, and I know that's not possible for everybody. So what I would say is if you can try and keep your social media scrolling to desktop only,
ooh,
that's another way to do it. But it's literally changed my life.
Wow. I thought I was good because I don't have my phone in the bedroom. I got one of those lights that like does a wake up alarm.
Is it the Lumi lamp?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're so good.
And then, slowly, well, then I moved my phone into the other room and I was like, that's great. But you really feel it. Like I realize now sometimes I wake up and I actually go in the other room and doom scroll for a while. And I'm like, this is not better. And I have a worse day every single day when I start my day with scrolling, but it's so addictive. It's unbelievable.
It's wild. There was a point last year I was on the tube home and I was on TikTok and I missed my stop by 2 stops.
Mm.
And I was just like, this is, that's actually outrageous.
I feel like a lot of people listening will be like, oh, is that bad?
Yeah.
I have done that.
Yeah.
I've definitely done
it's
that.
It's a thing.
So we like to end with 2 segments.
Mm.
And one is... 2 questions.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing what you know now, what's one thing you'd tell yourself 10 years ago?
I would say always listen to your gut. And I know that's quite an obvious one and it might sound really cliche, but the older I get, the more I know, whether it's a phone call, an interaction, a passing moment with somebody, if it feels off, it's off.
Mm.
And I've betrayed my intuition a few times and just gone with things and it's always bitten me on the ass.
Mm.
So I think if it feels off, trust it.
Have you had to like train that? Because I feel like my intuition's starting to come back now. I'm like meditating and doing all that stuff. But I remember it maybe 2 years ago, I was like, I don't feel an intuition. Do you feel like you've always had that kind of guidance?
I think yes, but in much more subtle ways. So mm-hmm. when I first started Selford, there were a few things that happened, mainly work situations that ended up left me in a not very nice situation, and right. I knew from the off, this feels a bit weird, or that felt a bit off key, but I don't think I was experienced enough to pick up the signs. Whereas now I can have a call with someone and I'll know straight away, even if it sounds like a great project, it's not right. Same with friendships as well. Like you were saying about the Mel Robbins thing, there has to be an energy match. And sometimes we can meet people and they can be the most compatible friends on paper and you can have the same interests. You can have all of these things that would... But the energy's not there. The vibe's not the vibe, and that's okay. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with either of you. You're just not each other's people. And sometimes I think we feel like we have to engineer certain relationships because maybe they look good for our ego. Maybe they look good, or we think they should work. If they don't work, don't try and force it. And I think, I do believe that when you make, not even when you cut people off, I think that's something that I'm really aware of. And I think is actually quite dangerous in our modern day culture. We like cut them off, cut out the toxic. And it's like, have you actually given people a chance to right their wrongs or had a conversation around it before you make that decision? So I'm not saying just cut people off, but I think when you make space for good things and when you don't entertain stuff that's not necessarily right for you, doors will swing open. And I think you have to trust that. I think loneliness can perpetuate like a scarcity mindset with people.
Yeah.
So don't cling on to people just because you feel like you've got no one else. You will find your people.
Yeah. I like the thing of like not cutting people off, because there's this theory, I think Charmadine Reed, it's from her book, which is an amazing book. Mm. What's it called? It's 12 Methods for Women. 12
Women. I've got it. I still need to read it. I've heard really good things.
It's really good. It gets better as you go along as well. But she talks about like your front row, and that sometimes in friendship and in life, you need to reorder your front row. So your front row is, if you're coming out on a stage and you're doing something you feel a bit vulnerable with, like who would be the people you'd sit in the front who you know are going to clap and cheer?
Oh, that's lovely. That's giving me goosebumps. That's
lovely. And it's
really,
like,
really lovely.
Sometimes there might be that person that on paper things really fit, and so, you know, you'd like to catch up about work or whatever, and maybe you just move them into your, like, they're your community, and maybe they're a bit, they're in the seats a little bit further back, they're not your front row, but identify who those people are at that point in your life, and they kind of reshuffle depending.
Yeah, I love that.
You know, where you're at.
I really like that.
So the other part of that question is, what's one thing you wish for yourself in 10 years?
I really am not a like future manifester. I'm a really happy person. I really like my life. Mm. Just more of this, I think. Feel really rooted in my purpose at the minute. I really love the work I do. I've got great people around me. So yeah, I think if life continues, I like having stuff to work towards, and I hope that selfhood will evolve and that I'll meet new people and I'll be able to travel. But just, yeah, I'm really happy.
That's,
I don't,
awesome.
There's not like a big end goal or big plan. It's just keep present, keep happy, keep working on things that I love, meeting good people. Yeah.
I love that. It's nice. It's actually refreshing to hear, you know, a bit less of the manifestation and like I'm charging towards this thing, because it can be quite trapping sometimes, thinking too much ahead.
I think so. And I had a really honest conversation with myself about a few things last year. But one thing that came up for me is this question of enough, like what is enough and when is enough enough? And I want to be able to enjoy life now and really absorb all the great stuff that's happening, and not take on as many projects so that I can give more into community stuff and hang out with my mates more and see my mum and my nan and have quality time with my partner. And that means taking a step back from work, and I'm actually okay with that. And I think it's quite challenging. I listened to earlier this year The Success Myth by Emma Gannon, which is a really great book, and it's basically just challenging the idea of success and what success looks like. And I think when you ask most people, a big part of my research is asking lots of different people, like, what are your standout happiest memories? Most of the time, in fact, all of the times I've asked, it's never been when I bought my house or when I got that Louis Vuitton bag. It's been, I was on the beach with my family and we had a barbecue, or went to the park for my birthday with a load of my friends and felt really loved. Like, it's often the things that have nothing to do with money.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, I want to be able to really juice everything that's going on without being too distracted by this like grand end goal that might be really anticlimactic when I get there.
I love that. And then we have a little segment we called Yes or Mess. So these are rapid fire questions, which you answer yes if you think it's a good thing or you agree with it, and mess if you think it's just not about that.
Okay, love this.
So, meeting up with strangers from the internet.
Yes.
Nice. Having a network of less close friends instead of a select very close circle.
I think that's really subjective. I can't say.
Can't say?
No.
Fair enough. Voice notes over 3 minutes.
Yes.
I love a podcast
from
a friend.
Me too.
Following what's hot on social media.
Oh. Depends on the context, but for the most part, I'm going to say mess.
Mm-hmm. And digital detoxes.
Again, depends on the context, why, how, and where, but for mostly, I'm going to say yes.
Love that. Thanks so much for being on The Weird Years.
Thanks, this is so fun.